Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Mon.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? We're back from Comic-Con. We survived. We're here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a blast.
I feel like you just looked at the shorts and hat that I'm wearing, and I feel like you just thought for a second about pointing out that I'm not in a suit and decided not to.
No.
Oh, no?
Wow, you're really self-conscious about that.
No. I'm just lying, guys. I'm not wearing a shorts and a hat. I just made that up.
No, he's totally in shorts and a hat. He's not in a suit. That's a weird thing. But Comic-Con, back to that.
Back to Comic-Con.
So it was a blast. We're going to go over it a little bit this episode, and we'll go over some metagame stuff, and we're going to go over the SCG event this last weekend. And so, yeah, but first, let's get some shout-outs out of the way. Let's do this quickly. I am at Kess Wiley on Twitter.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media. The podcast is at the MM Cast. And right off the bat, guys, just because we really want to do the episode next week one more time, we're delaying it 1 week because Comic-Con happened. Go to our Patreon, patreon.com. Donate a dollar, please, because it would be amazing if you did. It's how we stay alive and buy mics and do all the things we do. And submit a deck tech for a deck using a card from Hour of Devastation. We're going to do next week's episode.
Or since we didn't do Amaket, either a deck.
Yeah, anything that's like using cards that have come out.
Like a sweet Claim to Fame deck.
Sweet Solemnity deck.
Yep.
Like something. Submit that and do it on Patreon. And if you submit $1 as your donation, you will have the opportunity to have your deck submitted and teched on the air. We're going to do it next week. So do that, please. And otherwise, check out our sister podcast, the Command Zone on collected.company and Game Nights. Also, their YouTube channel is blowing up these days.
Yeah, they have a new episode coming out very soon. Josh spent the entire weekend not Comic-Conning, but editing. And he apparently all he did was work out, eat, and sleep and edit for 72 hours.
Sweet. Which sounds just like jacked with a sweet video.
Yeah. And from all the working out he's been doing.
Yeah. Cool.
Beyond that, last thing is we have a Facebook group. We just hit 500 plus members. So that's crazy because we launched it
for like a month.
2 weeks. Yeah. 3 weeks ago. And compared to the Facebook page, which if you look for the Facebook group, make sure it's a group, not a page. The page took us like a year, maybe 2 years to get to 600. And we're like,
never used it.
Well, it just doesn't like a group is a place to kind of to explain what the difference between a group and a page is. A page is a faceword forwarding piece for like a company. So it's used to kind of advertise to people. And it's not really created in a way that allows communities to kind of interact versus a group, which is built to kind of be more of a forum section so that we can interact with you guys and you guys can interact with each other, post cool deck list ideas you have. And kind of just do all the things you'd ever wanted to do in a Magic community, but on Facebook.
Cool.
And so check that out. It's awesome. That's the second best way, if not the best way, to interact with us after Twitter. And any other shout-outs? I'm thinking I can't remember anything. I think
yeah,
we
the only
get
other
the
thing is check out 10 Minutes of Magic on Anchor, anchor.fm. It's an app you can download. It's like Twitter meets podcasting. It's awesome. I have a station. I do daily content. And Alex and I are now doing one full day of Masters of Modern exclusive content. So if you want a second place to find our stuff.
It's vaguely against my will. Ben holds me down, puts a phone in front of my face and says, talk, and then.
Yeah. That's exactly what happens, yeah. And it's great content, yeah. So stop complaining.
I'll be screaming for help, but it's okay.
But yeah, if you guys want to find a second place to get Masters of Modern content with Alex and I together, that's the place to do it.
Minisodes.
It'll be somewhere between Monday and Wednesday every single week. Probably woke up today, I'm assuming, but you probably won't hear this till tomorrow, which means you'll get that content.
Yesterday?
Like time travel. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, guys, that's the deal. Let's get into our Comic-Con experience.
All right, so the first thing I want to talk about is the Magic exclusives, because I think this is something, Wizards didn't kind of announce exactly this fact, and it was maybe the most excited I was opening the box. Maybe that was on purpose, but also I think they could have advertised this. The back of that Nicol Bolas poster is an uncut Magic sheet.
Like, really?
It's a Mondo poster that they printed on a Magic uncut sheet, so it's all Magic cards on the back. Like, it's like, if you, like, turn it around, it's an uncut sheet, and then it just blank on the one side, so they printed the posters on the other side, which makes it way more legit. I thought it was just, like, a poster.
I didn't see the back. What's what's on the uncut sheet?
No,
I realize it's Magic cards.
It's just the back of
cards.
The back.
Oh,
it's a Magic back.
Got it. That's cool.
That was more significant. Like, there. If this poster just becomes, like, or someone has multiples, I would hope that they would get, because there's professional cutters that you can find. Like if you buy a cut sheet, you can get someone to cut them if you want those cards, which is generally avoided, but you can find a person to do that. Someone should cut this poster and make like cool tokens out of them and like play with them.
Sick.
That would be sweet.
Yeah.
If you have multiples, if you only have one, don't do that because it's really sick. And I need to, I've already got it in a frame on my wall. My future office will have it with my other Mondo posters and it'll be sweet. Really cool, really gorgeous. Like the internet doesn't do this poster service. It's like got this cool gold and silver inlay into it. It looks really sweet. And then the promos are way better looking in person than online.
I did see them in person, and they are quite.
There's like the printing on this is not the normal foil printing, and it's not the from the vault printing. It's like a third version that seems like just very clean, and the artwork on them is really pretty. I still don't love the Nicol Bolas art. Like I actually wish the poster art was the promo card art,
right?
Because that would be a much cooler looking kind of feel to it. But all the other ones, the cool like Egyptian hieroglyphic thing.
Right.
Already threw in the Chandra into Jund, though you've stolen all my Tarmogoyfs, and
yes.
Already threw the Gideon into Esper, so I'll be swinging some sweet promos the next tournament.
The Gideon is really making quite the impact in Modern, I have to say. It's more so, like, not...
More so than Chandra. It's, yeah, easy.
I don't want to go as far as to say more so than I was expecting, because you and I both acknowledged how good that card seemed like it could be, but, like... It was one of those things where, like, we say that a lot of the time. Like, this card could make an impact in Modern. But,
sure.
Like, that usually means is like, the one-of sideboard card that shows up 3 months down the line in someone's, like, SCG deck. Not, like, every person I talk to has this as a three-of in some sweet Mardu brew they came up with.
Well, I mean, I think this is probably the most successful Planeswalker in Modern since Jace. I can't think of another contender. Like, Liliana, the one that... was in the last Liliana printed. Not the last one, but the...
You're talking about...
Eldritch Moon Liliana.
Of the Last Hope.
Of the Last Hope. She has seen a lot of one-of play to two-of. Like, she's seen a lot of play, but it's never really in, like, high multiples. She's the only other contender, I think.
I love that card.
That card's really good.
That Liliana's like probably one of my favorite cards printed in quite a while.
But, like, in the last year, we've had three... In the like, the total of the last year, three of the five Planeswalkers they printed has seen decent Modern play. We've had...
Yeah.
Gideon, Chandra, and Liliana all really seeing play. Nissa and Jace. I don't think Jace needs another Modern playable card, I guess. Something that was interesting that I realized is that Liliana has this weird side, or black Planeswalkers in general have a cool little side negative to them. It's like a weakness to black that isn't really established very often because there's only really two monocolor black Planeswalkers.
Yeah, who's the second?
Obnixilis.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, there's... Yeah, so like... But it means that you can't really have multiple black Planeswalkers in play at the same time, which I think is really flavorful.
Yeah.
It's like the fact that Liliana is like pretty much the only black Planeswalker.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Means that like they make it so like black has a weakness. It's just like it's not going to be able to go wide on Planeswalkers versus other decks. I mean, there are other black Planeswalkers, but the two major ones, like Liliana is really the only black one they keep printing.
Yeah. It's true.
Mono black, and there's a bunch of
right.
Black green, black red.
Speaking of black Planeswalkers and
black white.
Not mono black, but...
Because Soren's not even black anymore. He's black white.
No. I love
he's locked in stone somewhere.
I've seen people now like multiple times at like little Modern local events playing Ashiok in Modern.
Okay.
I like see it pop up, and I have to say, it's consistent with our theory, which is that from the beginning we've just been saying like, if it costs three and it says Planeswalker, it's probably pretty good.
Yeah.
It's probably like better than you think. You know, there's probably a way to make that card competitive. Because like... It's still such a small number of cards that have ever been printed, which also ultimately means there are such a small number of things that effectively deal with Planeswalkers that, like, you can set your deck up in such a way always to take advantage of hitting that 3-drop Planeswalker in a way that's going to get you a lot of advantage. And,
right.
Yeah, I love 3-drop Planeswalkers. Anyway.
So beyond the Comic-Con exclusives, before we get into some of the announcements Wizards made, which is less Modern focused because it was really focused on the Commander product and Unstable. I also got to play, like, I'm going to collect every playable promo from every collectible card game at Comic-Con. So Star Wars Destiny, which is a game I'm playing a lot recently, had a Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker promo. And so the ways you don't know... the company Fantasy Flight released their first trading card game. So Fantasy Flight is a company that does the X-Wing miniature game, and what they do a lot of the time is they buy old Wizards trading card games that they're not making anymore, the rights to them, and print them as living card games, which is like you buy the entire game at once in a box instead of having to collect them. This year, or last year, they launched a Star Wars trading card game that's actually done really successful, but it uses dice. But this year, the promo was of Darth Vader and Luke, which are cards in the game, but it uses the original concept art for Luke and Darth Vader, that one where Luke has, like, the crazy Star-Lord mask and Darth Vader's, like, face is really elongated. The artist died recently. It's from the pitch book that George Lucas used to get Star Wars made.
Interesting.
So the actual artwork on the cards is, like, a sweet classic throwback.
Cool.
And then the other one was me and Craig Blanchett, who's on Game Nights in the Command Zone a lot, and I think has been on the podcast. He and me learned the Final Fantasy trading card game that came out.
Okay.
And it's like kind of a Magic knockoff. The main difference is that your life total is 7, and creatures' power and toughness matter to each other, but to you, it's just a one life if they hit you. You attack with each creature individually. But then when you take damage, instead of taking damage, you mill the top card into your damage pool. Huh. And so when you have 7 cards in your damage pool, you lose. But a lot of cards have an ability that if they get flipped or they enter the battlefield, both times it triggers. Hmm. So like it's like a what's a good ETB effect? If Thragtusk, either when it enters the battlefield, you gain 5 life, or if they mill it when you take damage, you would gain 5 life. Either way.
Interesting.
So that was like the one cool thing about it. Beyond that, we tried talking them into letting us just get the promos. They're like, no, you have to play. And so like, but they're like, we're busy. So we came back. And then while we were playing, and you normally only get one, a cosplayer that was cosplaying Magic, and then her friend like met up with us and like recognized us and me from the podcast, 'cause we met up on Twitter. Because they recognized us, the Final Fantasy card game demoers, like, whoa, they're like Magic people, and started asking us how they could explain the game that we just learned from them to people better. And they gave us a bunch of free cards. It was really fun. I mean, like, it was cool because I love Final Fantasy and playing Magic the Gathering with Vivi and Zidane and characters I like, but it's basically just Magic.
Speaking of which, actually, meeting people who the podcast and all that, I like was walking with a camera kit to try to get to an off-site interview site to interview Casper Van Dien, who's Johnny Rico from Starship Troopers, and Ed Neumeier, who wrote Starship Troopers and RoboCop, and like ran into a Masters of Modern listener.
Nice.
And he was like, "Hey, Masters of Modern." I was like, "What's up, man?" But also, it happened to be walking down the boardwalk, like, which, you know, the IMDb boat there connected like to the site, and every time they would have a new cast coming across the walkway to get to the boat, they would close it off like the freaking Beatles.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, it was like blazing hot, and I was rushing, and I was gonna be late to my interview, and I was like trying to get around this barricade, like, no, I am a fan of Riverdale, but like I need to get through here. And this guy was like, "Hey, Masters of Modern, what's up?" And I was like so rushed, and I was like, "Hey man, good to see you, thanks for saying something, I need to go right now." So if you're listening, I apologize if I was rude. I really appreciate you introducing yourself. Anyway, so yeah, Comic-Con.
So yeah, I mean, we met cosplayers, there's a lot of cool stuff going on. And anything beyond the promos? Okay, now, onto what Wizards announced. First off, we now know what the four tribes of, or actually, we kind of know of the commander set. So we know one of them is vampires, and then the main guy is Soren's dad.
Okay.
And he's like this red and white arted guy. And then the other one, it looks like it's cleric spirits or humans, black, white. Clerics would be my guess, though it's kind of weird because tribe is normally not class.
Sure.
The other thing is we know what the tribes are, or the main factions of Unglued are, and we know that Steamflogger Boss is being reprinted.
Believe it or not, I read all of this information. Oh. I actually paid attention, and I took in all of the un.
Okay.
What's it called?
Unstable.
Unstable, yep. Right? Yeah, I read all of them. I try to remember like offhand if I can remember what they all were, but like.
So, Blue White.
Don't remember.
Order of the Widge. It's like a goofy guy with a beard and on a robot.
Yeah, is the Blueback Agents of Sneak?
Yes. Which I called dibs online already. So all the other people trying to be Agents of Sneak.
Green White is like, what was Green White? Like mutant.
Crossbreed Labs.
Yeah,
so it's like the picture is like a monkey spider.
Yep.
Or a spider monkey.
Yep.
Oh, I get it. I'm assuming they're all puns.
Yep.
Goblin Explosioneers is red green. It's got a goblin with 3 heads.
Yep.
And League of Dastardly Doom is the black red tribe.
Sick. Unstable. Exciting. Are you going to play a lot of Unstable?
I'll play it once. You know, the original reason I quit Magic back when I was a kid was because Unglued came out. And yep. I was just, like, not down at all.
Yep.
So, I'm not sure.
Cool.
I'm not sure how excited I am for Unstable. Someone made a good point that what the conspiracy sets did were a much better kind of version of what this is trying to do. And the humor is a little bit better at existing. Like, because Garbage Fire exists in Conspiracy. And that's like a silly card that they would never print regularly and is like totally a colloquialism, but is funny in Conspiracy. So yeah, I mean that's kind of what they announced at the Comic-Con event. It was a little bit more on kind of the social aspect, which didn't really affect us that much. But the one thing that did really, really, really affect us is that there's 1.5 Modern Pro Tours next year.
Yeah, there's a Modern Pro Tour again, guys. Now, Alex and I did the little 10-minute mini episodes we were talking about.
Right.
We actually did one of these last week, the day they announced the news. So if you heard that on Anchor, you got to hear us with our first thoughts on the Pro Tour. But if you didn't, this is your first time hearing us talk about it, which is really, really, really exciting. Like, on so many levels, this is exciting.
It's interesting because there's kind of two reactions to it. The first one is, oh, God, we're going to have the
diversity
format
bannings
destroyed
again.
Because of this, because there are negatives to the Pro Tour on Modern, and we'll kind of go over some of those. But then there's the other half, is like, yay, it's a focus again. And I think it's kind of, there's a two-part reason it happened. One, I think when they originally got rid of it, they did it with the intent of having the hyper-rotation of Standard, making Standard almost consistently fresh. But because they're now back to the classic rotation schedule of one rotation a year, it means that consistently only Standard Magic Pro Tour will not be as exciting.
Yes, and also something I've noticed, and this is just me theory crafting here, but I feel like what they said was, okay, you know, we've gotten Modern to this place that we like, and we don't love the diversity banning stuff, and it's not helping us sell new product, so let's kill it and really focus on the marketing budget being towards selling Standard. Standard's always worked. Standard will keep working. Well, unfortunately, the course of the last year for Standard has been kind of a mixed bag. There's been some interest. There's definitely been some disappointment. And Modern, even though it's not a Pro Tour format, has continued to stay healthy and exciting, and there's so much love for it.
And yes, buying packs versus buying singles is not what Modern's trying to sell necessarily. But if you look at every Modern Pro Tour over the last few,
they've been dominated by strategies that come from the new sets. Look at Eldrazi. Like,
Eldrazi dominated. Delve plus Prowess dominated the Pro Tour before that. Almost every single one of these is affected by Standard. Like, Standard prints cards in the Modern. It's a thing that affects it. So, even if you look at the last year, between all of the Delirium effects on Modern, plus all of the additional artifact cards that got added to strategies, which one of the reasons I think Affinity is so much more powerful right now, and we'll get into that later, is it just got a lot of tools. If you look at Amaket's effect, like, Amaket is even affecting the stuff with Gideon, which we already mentioned. So, like,
Vizier
Standard affects Modern, surprising no one. And beyond that, you know, there was a tweet by Aaron Forsyth, and we linked to it on our Twitter, that he stated there will not be diversity bans.
Right.
We will not ban cards for diversity reasons. We're going to ban it at the same policy we have now. So they never really left the January ban cycle. Like, the only time they banned cards out of January to this point was Eldrazi Winter's emergency ban, and that was still just an emergency ban.
Totally.
So, you know, Gitaxian Probe got banned last January. So if there needs to be cards banned out of Modern, it's going to happen then anyways, regardless of the Pro Tour. And I think they're going to be less willing to just do it for funsies. I think they're not going to do it to shake it up. They'll do it if it's needed. And it may be needed. And we're going to find out what that entails.
Yeah, to finish the thought that I was having, I guess my point was, like, I think they're pretty smart at Wizards. And I think they're looking at all the data from across the world, and they're saying, wow, there is this incredible commitment to this format that we took a Pro Tour away from people, yet it did not deter them from continuing to evolve it and make it interesting and play it at a high level and love it. And, like, a lot of the best players in the world do love it. A lot of them hate it, but a lot of them love it. And I think they just looked at that and they were like, you know what? We're going to take this community and we're going to say, guys, you stuck with it even after we took the Pro Tour. We're going to give it back to you because we know at the highest level this is something you want to see. It keeps it exciting for you.
Beyond that, I think there was a little bit of a short-sightedness to the Pro Tour not being Standard does not set packs today. or sell packs today.
Right.
Because Modern has, I could be corrected by the internet, but I'm pretty sure that Modern has better viewership on average for their GPs and when there were Pro Tours than standard versions of the same.
I believe that is correct.
Excluding maybe the standard Pro Tours during right after rotation.
Right.
Those are different because the entire world is different. But in general, Modern has higher viewership. And the new CEO is taking a more digitally focused approach to Magic. If you look at games like Hearthstone or any other of the digital card games or regular card games, they have a much larger focus on digital streaming. And that, as an advertisement in itself, is helpful to people to play Magic. And the nice thing about Modern is and I've said this for a long time, standard, you just need to know the new cards. But if you're a new player or you're a relapsed player coming back to Magic, Modern is a better place to jump into viewership-wise because you're like, oh, I recognize Bob or I recognize Tarmogoyf.
Right.
Versus if you come into standard, person who reads every spoiler every day and assumes or assess with the newest set, couldn't recognize probably standard staples from the most, like, I couldn't tell you what some random cards are doing well.
I
from
was
afar.
Reading the standard breakdown of the weekend this last night, and I was like, huh, so these are the cards, huh? Like, I was like,
Catcher's Monument is apparently a thing.
Yeah, I was like seeing, Mono Red won the Invitational standard. I was like, that's interesting. Like, I got, or not the Invitational, the Classic. And I was like, oh, okay, I know some of these cards. I was like, oh, look at, there's an Escalate card in there that's not Collective Brutality. The Collective Defiance was
right.
A card.
It's easier to be a lazy Magic watcher with Modern than it is with standard, just because you don't have, it's not rotating. And Magic is already so hard to watch that I think that's a huge benefit and why it does so well. People right. are excited to see what Modern is doing.
Totally.
Now, I don't want every pro. I think one Pro Tour a year is fine. Now, in regards to the solving of the format versus the bannings of the format, I think in general, pros are going to try and solve the format, but you're going to have the Corey Burkharts that just show up, or the Lee Sutians who are playing, have played Blue Moon in every single Pro Tour they've been in, a Modern Pro Tour. So, like, we talked about this before, that I think the most exciting version of the Modern Pro Tour is one without big shakeups, because then people play a deck they're best at instead of trying to break it. And
they become known for playing a strategy, which
right,
is a
like,
good thing.
Like, Corey Burkhart being Grixis all the time on board, period, is super exciting in Modern, and people
yeah.
love it. People
you,
love that they're like, oh, that's what
he
Grixis does.
That's the Grixis guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or and, like, oh, he always plays Mono Red. That's a
right.
thing he does.
Or like the fact that, not Kai Booty,
Finkel
plays Storm in every event he possibly can.
Right.
Or that Brian Kibler plays Naya in every event he possibly can. Like, these are... It's cool that decks and strategies are associated with players, and Modern allows that to be kind of brought out to the extreme.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Let's talk about the fact that there's a $1 million Pro Tour this year.
Yeah, the 20 next year.
Yes, next year. The
25th. Within the next 400 days.
It's going to be a team Pro Tour, and it's going to be, I believe, in Milwaukee. No, not Milwaukee. It's in.
I'm surprised it's not in Seattle, actually, but that's just...
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me, but there's an exhibition event happening at the same time as a team Pro Tour, and the prize purse for the two events combined is $1 million, which, like, don't do the thing like Alex did when I first said this to him.
Because there's
like,
three players, so it's
like,
divided
oh, it's
by
three,
players, so
it's
not
like,
that
not
much.
That big of a deal. I was like, the normal prize purse for an event at Pro Tour is $250K. This is four times the money. Four
yeah, but
times
there's
the money.
Like, so, like, there's the side event. Or the,
and three more players?
And two more players, so that's
so
four
So you're
four
telling
winners.
Me that if they were like, we're running four Pro Tours simultaneously in the same weekend with four different prize purses, you wouldn't be like, that's insane.
Oh, no. I
there's $1 million of prize money at a Magic
there's
event.
There's a difference between me saying that I don't think this is insane and me saying that it's illogical why that purse was increased and it's exciting, but not something that's surprising.
Yes.
It is insane that we're getting a team event Pro Tour, period.
Yeah, and also on top of that, you mentioned Magic going towards that digital stuff and that they're clearly paying attention. Well, in my humble opinion, this is yet another example of them paying attention. It's like the big esports put a lot of money in their prize purses.
Right.
That's what they do. They respect their players, they respect their player base, and they encourage their players by saying, you can get a huge payout. If you do really well at this, you can make a lot of money. It's worth your time.
Totally.
And when you increase from 250 to $1 million for an event, it's sending the message, this is what we're doing now. This is the future. The future is commit to this game. And it's exciting.
Yeah.
Really exciting.
I mean, if we look at this is also off the tail off of like every single team event that's happened over the last year, because they keep increasing how many they're having, has been extremely successful
for them.
What are
there, 16 team Grand Prix this next year? Is that what I read?
16?
I believe there's 16 really? Team Grand Prix this next year. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, right?
I didn't read that.
Ooh, look at this. Chris Costa asking to join the group. I'll approve you. Welcome to the group, Chris Costa.
Yeah, see, if you join the Facebook group, you can get added while we're recording. Yeah, so that's insane. I think like next year is going to be a blast.
Yeah, it should be a really exciting year for MTG.
Anything else on the Mono Pro Tour before we get into a little bit metagame stuff?
No, I don't think so. You know, just it's just nice to have it back. I don't know. We had talked about this. We were just saying a couple weeks ago how much we missed it. It's like, it's just exciting to know that there's going to be a time of year where we get to see like the best of the best playing at the highest level, like trying to game plan. Yeah, exactly. It's just exciting. I don't know. I love it. I love Modern. It is my favorite format. Yes, you can whistle the Karate Kid song. Congratulations. Karate Kid? What?
That song?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it is?
Yeah.
Oh.
Keep going.
You were looking at me like I was wrong.
No.
You know I'm right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great song.
Love the Karate Kid.
Yeah, love the...
Actually, a family friend is the bad guy from that movie.
Really?
Yeah, the evil sensei.
No way!
Yeah, yeah.
Sweep the leg?
Yeah.
Wow!
Him and my stepdad were, like, really good friends.
It's one of my favorite things
Uncle Marty.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I can't think what that actor's name is.
Marty.
But what's his last name?
Oh. I always call him Uncle Marty since I was a child, so I don't actually know if I know that.
Yeah. I love yelling sweep the leg. It's one of my favorite pop culture quotes. Like, anytime I'm watching like the movie Trivia Schmodown be filmed or anything like that, and you're trying to like trash talk and hype people up, I love yelling sweep the leg.
Yeah.
It's one of the greatest.
Yeah,
So yes, it's exciting. It's nice to have it back. It's going to be great. I think that this next Modern Pro Tour, you know, you and I haven't actually traveled to the Modern Pro Tour yet. Neither of you or I have done that. We haven't just gone to be there.
If I am in town, maybe.
I know three of the Cove.
Marty Cove.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I know that three of the four Pro Tours next year are U.S. Pro Tours. Do you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, there's clear. And there's
you know where everything is.
Yeah, there's a clear focus, it seems, going forward that the events, Pro Tours and Grand Prix, are going to be serving the U.S. More than the international audience, which is just a little bit of like... That's the largest player base, so that's what they're going to do, and it's cool to fly around, but I do...
It's also... I feel like the U.S. is an easy-to-travel-to location.
Well, also, though, so if you think about this, by making multiple Pro Tours a year in the U.S. as opposed to international, when so much of the player base, especially at the highest level, are U.S. players, the amount of money they have to spend on plane tickets is so much lower that
sure.
they can probably use that money to increase the prize purse.
I mean, like that, but there are a lot of Asian players, like there are a lot of players from around the world. I mean, I think some years it'll be like this, but I don't, and I think this is also because of the 25th anniversary Pro Tour being here, but like normally my guess is it'll still kind of on average be one in Europe, one in Asia, two in the United States. And that's kind of what it always has been. And like, yes, this year it's not that, but
I don't know about
assumption
that.
Is it'll go back to that.
I don't know about that because Channel, it's the same reason like Channel is running U.S. Grand Prix, which is why there are so many more U.S. Grand Prix as opposed to the international ones this next year. I think it's unintentional. And I don't think what I just said about the prize purse is lost on them. I think they probably had a meeting and somebody was probably like, well, if you look at it and 72% of the players are U.S. players that are going to these other countries and we're spending all this money to fly people over the place over three events, if you cut that down so that you can save, oh, I don't know, like 90 grand or 120 grand per event because you're not sending as many players
sure.
internationally, we can put that 350K into event prize money. And if we can increase by 350,000 over multiple events.
Well, but you don't think a significant amount of the player base that plays to be at the Pro Tour, the actual chance to go to a tropical or cool or foreign location is really the motivation for them?
I think it's exciting, but I think also, as Seth Manfield said in his TCG player article that I'm stealing all my information from, that a lot of the time the pros that go to these international locations don't get to experience the site at all because they're spending all their time beforehand prepping in a hotel room somewhere, and then the event happens, they go home.
Sure.
And like, I get that. It's a high level event. You know, you're supposed to be practicing 8 hours a day in those days leading
totally.
Up. So, I mean, all of the numbers I just used, guys, they're completely arbitrary and I made all of them up on the spot. But like, I'm just guessing that there is some amount of that is related. I don't think it's lost on them.
Okay.
Yeah. So
no, that's fair. I think that's beyond that on the Modern Pro Tour. I am fascinated to see if there are bannings beforehand. I mean, that's kind of what we're going to get into a little bit next before we finish off the episode. Well, I guess we'll do TCG player kind of standings and how that event went down this last weekend.
You mean the SCG Classic?
Did I say TCG?
Yeah.
I meant SCG.
SCG
too
Classic.
Too many letters.
In Atlanta. And it was a cool event. I did this a little bit on 10 Minutes of Magic. I broke the thing down last night. The winning deck.
Subtle plug.
Affinity. Affinity won the event.
Yeah.
Affinity was only two in the top 16, first place and seventh place. Now, this is something that I think is very cool.
Two of the top eight.
Yeah. Yes. But I think it's important to note, it's great to see that only two of the top 16 are Affinity. Even though it won the event, it doesn't worry me. It just doesn't worry me. Affinity's been around as the same deck for years and years and years. If you want to beat Affinity, you can beat Affinity.
Since 617, so between 617 and 723, and we'll get into this a little later because we've gotten a nice little breakdown of the data of the top tables for each of the major events in that time. Affinity has more finishes than Grixis Death Shadow by double.
Right, totally. It's because the
of
level
44
one...
decks that have made the top tables, it has 10 of the places.
Yeah, so, okay.
That's 25% of the format.
The level one response to what's going on in the format is Grixis Shadow is the best deck. I'm going to play the best deck. The level two response is Affinity is really, really good. I should play Affinity because it's good against Grixis Shadow. That's such a small sample size in terms of the amount of time that's happened.
Well, but it's not a sample size. You have to also take into account that this is the top tables of each of those tournaments. Yeah, so yes, it's a sample size, but it's taking literally all of those tournaments
I'm
and all the players.
I'm saying sample size in a month. So it's a month of data. 617 to 723.
Sure.
So like what I'm trying to say is this rolls. This is how it goes. If Affinity's too good, people will adjust. They'll play different decks, and Affinity will get worse. That's how it is. It doesn't mean that it's the best deck. It just means that
maybe
at the moment,
I mean, like, we've also sitting in a world where Affinity just got through a second, or it's like what, fifth modern artifact themed set block. And
what did we get out of Kaladesh?
Spire. Let me look it up. I can look that up. Keep talking.
Yeah, Spire. The other land. I don't think. Does anybody play the search?
The tutor
land. And search land?
I don't think so.
I don't think there's a lot that came out of the new set, at least not that's coming to mind immediately. But point is, Affinity won the event. It was first place and seventh place. Second place?
Expeditions.
Second place, we did get an interesting deck, and a deck that is referred to currently as Tribal Zoo. But it's not what you would think, which is like Cat Zoo or something. It's a deck using domain cards. They're calling it Tribal Zoo because of Tribal Flames. It's playing multiple copies of Tribal Flames and multiple copies of Might of Alara, the domain spells, and basically a zoo deck that's playing like Swift Spears and Nicodles and stuff like that, Tarmogoyfs, and then it's also playing Death Shadow. So it's kind of a hybridized zoo Death Shadow domain deck. It's a cool deck. It seems interesting. It's playing more two drops in its Tribal Flames, but it still plays a very, very low land count. So that deck is definitely on my radar. You know, it's good. It definitely plays a lot of very good cards. How good it is, how much it'll last, I don't know. I do find it a little surprising that it took this long to play Tribal Flames. Don't you?
It goes back and forth, but yeah, definitely. I mean,
like, this is a deck that was basically taking advantage of the domain strategy for quite a while.
Right. Well, I think part of it is like Blood Moon isn't as strong as it used to be.
Yeah.
And so it's taking advantage of that because like Tribal Flames is actively bad against Blood Moon.
Most things are actively bad against Blood
Moon. The main thing it got was Spire of Industry,
which is like fine. I mean, that card's good, but
yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yes, it's part of the format. Like, even if you go to MTG Goldfish, like, Affinity is 10.37% of the metagame. Grixis Death Shadow is 8.84%. Like, you say, like, people will react to it, but it won a GP and has won two of the four X... sorry, gonna sneeze. Not sneezing. Two of the four SCG events.
Yeah.
Since GP Vegas. Like, it has a target on its face and has had for 4 weeks, and no one has reacted to it.
There's no doubt in my mind that Affinity is one of the best decks, maybe the best deck.
I mean, it might be it is currently in a position that the decks that exist that are also good are bad against Affinity because
if it is a good Grixis Death Shadow matchup, it has a good Titan Shift matchup, it has a good Eldrazi matchup, it has a good Burnup matchup, it has a good Blue-White Control matchup, it has a good Storms matchup, it has a good Tron matchup.
Wait, I don't get this. Why? When I looked at the data last night, the Tribal Zoodeck I was talking about got second place. It's listed here in first place now. This is incorrect. This has to be incorrect. I checked the information last night.
I don't know. It might have changed. Are we wrong?
I mean...
What event is it?
This is the Modern Classic.
Yeah, no, Affinity one.
Yeah, okay, it's just wrong. So, yeah, aside from that, though...
Unless, like, the player got DQ'd post-fact.
Yeah, you have Grixis Delver coming in third place. Grixis Delver, just
well, like the first
good.
Deck going through this that, like, has a good Affinity matchup really is Abzan.
Yeah.
And that's only 2% of the metagame.
No, you're talking about Black-Green Midrange? Or are you talking about...
Abzan, Black-Green Midrange decks.
Yeah, well, so the fourth place here. So I'm looking at this list. The fourth place
I'm looking at MTG Goldfish metagame.
Gotcha. I'm just talking about these results. So the fourth place deck is that black-green deck, that straight-laced black-green deck
sure.
we were talking about. Remember the one that's not playing any white, it's not playing any red. It plays the three ooze main deck. It's playing, if you look here, I think this is cool. So it's playing two copies of Mishra's Bauble.
Right,
but it's not playing Bauble as like a, it's not going like the full Bauble, like, okay, I want to have this card to always have in my opening hand. It's going one copy of Traverse, and it's playing two Collective Brutality. It's playing the Lilianas and the Tarmogoyf, which just ultimately means you can cycle Bauble on turn one, or you can discard it to those other things to make your Delirium better, to make your Goyf better.
It's interesting because it doesn't play any Grimflayers.
Right.
So it's really for the one Traverse, and then the Tarmogoyf gets slightly bigger.
Yeah, totally. And like it's valuable to be able to discard it to a Collective Brutality to make your Tarmogoyfs bigger and to fuel
sure.
your Traverse. I think it's interesting. It's like a very very subtle touch on the deck.
I don't know if I'd ever discard it to Collective Brutality. I think I would cycle it and always just see what the next option is.
Maybe. Yeah. It just depends. Depends what
obviously if I draw it on my turn and I need to discard a card to Collective Brutality right there so I can Thoughtseize and kill a creature that they played, I'll discard it. But like,
yeah,
almost always it's better to cycle it because you gain value from cycling it more than, because you can always discard the next card.
Collective Brutality is so good.
So good.
The card's so good.
Yep.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite cards.
But in general, I like the decks that, if you look at the top of the metagame right now, it's just really weak to Affinity. And I think that's one of the reasons it's doing so well, but I also just think in general that deck is always good. It's just right now the decks that are also good don't have good answers to Affinity.
Yeah, so continuing down this list real quick, you have in fifth place the Jeskai Control deck. This is the one that's playing like four Spellqueller main deck and the three Logic Knots. It's like we've seen this a couple times recently. The Red-Green Ponza deck in sixth place is definitely exciting and a deck that a lot of people like. Do you know what this deck is?
It's the Land Destruction deck that has Arbor. It plays your land taps for two mana and you can untap them with Arbor Elf.
It plays the Utopia Sprawl Arbor Elf thing, so it's trying to play Mulvaney Acid Moss on turn two. That's the ultimate goal is you play turn one Arbor Elf, turn two Utopia Sprawl, untap your land, play Acid Moss turn two, destroy their land, search out a forest. It's like so sick because it ultimately means that if you do that, you can turn three Inferno Titan while they're down a land.
Okay.
It's like so bananas. That's so crazy.
Yeah.
This deck, like the turbo nature of this deck is crazy. But it's playing, four Stone Rain, four Blood Moon, four Acid Moss.
Sure.
It's like just going all in on the strategy and just like a bunch of sweet mid-range cards, like it's playing Thrag Tusk, it's playing Inferno Titan, it's playing, where is the list? I think it's playing Prime Times as well, right? No, Storm Breath, Thrun, Worm Coil, the Birds of Paradise, plays three Bonfire, two Primal Command. This deck is so sweet. So sweet. Two Chandra, Torch of Defiance. Like, I could see myself playing this deck. I almost just want to play it this weekend. I'm so excited about Ponza. Somebody on our group was like, considering playing Ponza this weekend, talk me out of it. I'm like, I'm not going to talk you out of it.
I'm going to talk you into it.
Then you have Affinity, Blue-White Control, which is a very straight-laced Blue-White Control deck.
Control's doing actually really well recently. For how many times people complain about Control being like not good in Modern, like in general, Control is one of the best archetypes right now.
Yep. Counters Company, which is just like Vizier of Remedies, Devoted Druid combo, and just, you know, collected company, Court of Pong. It's that deck. It's sweet. That came in 10th place. You know, you have Burn. You have Lantern Control. You have two copy of Elves in 13th and 14th. You have Amulet Titan in 12th, which is cool to see. High finish for Amulet Titan. We have... Yeah, I mean, look, this deck plays 4 Amulet of Vigor and 4 Azusa. This is the Amulet Titan deck that is still a thing. You can still do this.
Yeah. I don't think Amulet Titan... I think it's much more of a dice roll deck than it used to be. Like, and it used to be totally a dice roll deck, whereas, like, do I win? How lucky did I get?
Right.
But it still has extremely powerful draws that, like, will just beat people.
Totally. The other deck that we have coming in 15th place is the Humans Collected Company deck, which is, this is definitely a sweet deck.
Is it playing Mayor of Averbrook?
Yes, it is. This deck's totally sweet. Yeah. This deck is like right up my alley, and I feel like I've tried to brew something similar to this before, but it's playing like Hierarchs and Mayors and Champion of the Parish. The card in here that stands out to me, aside from playing 3 of each Thalia, plays 3 of each Thalia. You believe that? In the main deck.
Yep. Both of them are really good.
but it does play a copy of Anna Fenn's The Foremost in the main deck, which I actually think is one of the best cards in Modern right now.
Because it eats graveyards, but also makes things bigger. And yeah, it's good.
It's a 4-4 for 3 that automatically eats graveyards. It's
like, as good as Hollow One. That's a 4-4 for free.
Did you get the name right?
Yeah.
Wow, look at you.
I own some now, so I can look at them and get it correct.
And then last but not least, we have a deck that I feel like is right up your alley, Martyr Reanimator, in 16th place.
Sweet.
Yeah, Bedlam Revelers and Elesh Norn, Gristlebrand, Iona. Plays Nahiri as a 2-of, so it's got the like Search Out My Fatties plan as well. And then, you know, Lingering Souls, Tormenting Voice.
What's the big Gristlebrand, Iona, Elesh Norn, Bedlam Reveler? Sweet.
Yeah, and it plays 3 Unburial Rites.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's a good deck. Seems cool.
Cool.
So that's the top 16, guys. You know, a fun tournament. Definitely look at all that diversity. Just like sweet decks.
Yeah.
Like totally, totally, totally sweet decks.
So I want to give a big shout out to, because this is the last thing we'll do, and then we're going to sign off in this episode, and to...
Big shout out.
Hagen Kirk, and I very well may be saying his name wrong, and I apologize, but he's been sending us a little data snapshot for the last month of kind of what the Modern metagame is looking like.
Right.
That we get to use, like, what he's doing of just top tables of major events, so SEG, GPs only, or some high-level RPTQs, versus MTG Goldfish. We kind of get this spread of, because MTG Goldfish takes a lot of the Modo metagame into place, which is a little bit warped based on just, like, laziness.
Yeah, right.
And together you get this nice little snapshot of what paper looks like versus Modo, and that's kind of what we were talking about. And it's really interesting because he kind of breaks it down in tiers and what's doing the best right now.
Breaks down in tiers. Honey, is that sad?
Yeah, no, it's really, yeah. but tier decks, so like his tier 0 has Affinity Control and Grixis Death Shadow and Burn. Which is really interesting because that's kind of a little bit different than what MTG Goldfish has. But I want to get back to like the point, like Affinity is crazy good right now. Like when we were talking about our ban watch list, like Mox Opal keeps being very high for me.
Does it kill the deck if you ban it? Does it actually 100% kill the deck?
No.
It doesn't?
No.
No. Still doable. It's just like...
It just takes away its like dumb moments.
What do you, to keep it explosive, what do? Do you replace it with Spirit Guide? Is that what happens?
Hate that idea, actually. I don't hate the idea of playing Spirit Guide instead. I don't think it needs it. Like, I think it's, obviously it makes it very, very powerful and possibly too strong. And then we'll know if it's too strong by the end of the year and how resistant it becomes to people starting to focus on it and having won its third SEG event or second. But I think that... Playing a bunch of really good artifacts together, playing Artifact Tribal is always going to be good. And Mox Opal definitely helps, but Affinity was a good deck before Mox Opal, and I think Affinity will be a fine deck afterwards.
Also, like, case in point, look what happened when they banned a card out of Death Shadow aggro. It became a different deck that became a better deck in the end.
Sure.
So it's like, who's to say that if they banned a card out of Affinity, some slightly slower, a little more mid-range version of Affinity wouldn't just become the better deck?
Right. I think like all the decks that take advantage of Mox Opal, I think would be fine. I think we have Affinity, which I think will recuperate. I think it doesn't have its insane nut draw anymore, but it still has a great draw when it comes to like
the it still has Springleaf Drum. It still has other things it can do.
Right.
And I think Lantern Control doesn't lose a lot of its strength. And now we'll see what they unban. I think Affinity versus without Mox Opal versus a Stoneforge Mystic deck with it, or if Bloodbraid Elf comes back, it really hurts the deck, because I think right now one of its strengths is that red-green X decks are not at the height that they could be.
Right.
And the ones that are much more focused on cheating out a Primeval Titan, and so they're not as easily able to focus on a heavy, aggressive, specific spear attack.
Right.
You know, they have hate cards, but Affinity needs to win game one and then just needs to be resilient for game two. So that's, I think, where it's running into its strength right now. So if a Jund deck becomes good again, or a top-tier deck, then it gets hurt. Like, that's, like, Affinity has always been kept down kind of by the strength of Jund. And right now we're in a moment where Jund is not good.
Why do we think Jund isn't good right now?
I think it's fine. It's not Grixis Death Shadow is just a better version of what it's doing, I guess.
It's just more efficient.
Your Tarmogoyf is, you have eight Tarmogoyfs instead of four.
Right.
Fair. And it's payoff cards of like Kalidus or, I think also part of it is just Bolt isn't as good as it used to be.
Yeah, like, though people are playing Bolt again. The second place deck, the tribal one, was playing four Bolt.
Well, yeah, but that's it. Bolt is played when you're playing a burn.
Yeah.
You need a burn option. And, you know, one of the reasons I think Affinity is doing so well is Bolt is so bad right now.
Yeah.
Like, because Bolt isn't good against Death Shadow, people are playing less Bolt, which Affinity does better against.
Yep.
And that's kind of where they're sitting at. Their biggest prey, which was, like, Snapcaster Mage and Bolt, just isn't seeing as much play as it used to.
Yep.
And, yeah, so that's I think, why they're doing so well. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that pretty much does it, right?
Yeah, I guess, you know, make sure to follow us on Twitter, at the MMCast.
Yeah.
I am at Kess Wiley.
You can find me at Ben Bateman Media.
Thanks to everyone who said hi to us. There's a bunch, and I don't have everyone's name, so thank you to everyone. Big shout out to Hagen Kirk for coming up with all this data. I want to say thank you. You know, make sure to check out the Command Zone on collected.company, which is the website you can find us to. And thanks to Wizards for shouting out the Pro Tour.
And wish me luck, guys. I'm going to be playing Superior Burning Coco
yeah,
in
next
two
week's gonna
PPGQs
be a,
this weekend. I'm going to be able to actually give you guys some raw data, some tournament reports
nice.
From how this deck performed. And I'm excited to take it into battle and see how it does. And, yeah, you know, wish me luck because it's going to be fun.
Sweet.
Sick.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you guys next week.
See you guys.
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.